AAC meeting, November 6, 2017.
Good evening. Everybody's moved to the right. The dead sun is the time stuff. There's only a few people on the left anymore. But anyway, we can move ahead. Welcome to the November meeting of the Accessibility Advisory Committee. And we'll start with our call to order and our introductions. And to my left is my vice chair. And I'll turn on her microphone.
Denise, for the sake of the tabernacle, the vice chair,
Thank you.
And all those in favor of the amended motion?
Aye.
abstain? We're good. We'll now go to approval of the prior meeting minutes. Has everybody had the opportunity to read the minutes? Can I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Minutes are accepted.
Mr. Chair, this is B.
Yes.
All of our microphones are not operating properly, so I'd like the committee to use their outside voice.
That may be dangerous. But we'll find an appropriate level of use. The last thing that we have to approve is the board report. And has everybody read the board report? Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Was it on the floor for discussion? I sent suggestions out of things we might want to add, and I'll throw that out for discussion. One of the things was there was discussion of a building drive, and the issues moved to the Metro Access Subcommittee for follow-up. And that is in the minutes, but it's not in the board report. I think we probably ought to include that into the board report. The other thing is a meeting with the Ford representatives to discuss the modifications needed for the new Metro Access vehicles was discussed. We had a pre-arranged meeting, and then we're meeting with them this evening, and I thought it might be nice to mention that in the board report for this month. And then, last of all, we had our award ceremony last week. And I think it might be nice to mention we had our award ceremony and that the Hettinger Award was given to Mrs. Hudgens, that the Simon Award was given to the Art of Northern Virginia, and there was a special Distinguished Service Award given to our immediate past chairperson. And so I would make the suggestion that somebody make a motion to add that to the board report.
I move that. Second.
Thank you. Discussion? No discussion? Call a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? It passes. We're ready to move on to the public comment period.
I'll sign up. Where do I sign?
We're counting on Mr. Romney to tell us about Mr. LaHood.
Well, no, I'm not expecting you to do that. I was just going to suggest.
I was just going to suggest again that the AAC, like me, should have an interest in seeing the award of contract with regard to Maryland Mobility Rides. It's now been operational for about 6 weeks. What are the numbers? What was in the original award of contract, and what are the numbers? When can AAC expect to see the numbers for the startup of Maryland Mobility Rides? Thank you. The microphone is funny tonight.
Yes, Mr. Orleans hasn't mentioned it. There is a meeting that has been arranged for the public to comment on former Secretary of Transportation LaHood's report to the governor of Virginia. He was commissioned by Mr. McAuliffe to do that. He has been presenting the report to various groups from the Chamber of Commerce to the COG to the Business Roundtable. And tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock, we will be having an open meeting on 8th Street Northwest. I believe it's 500. We can get the correct address.
That's right.
Got it right, 500 8th Street Northwest. And there are going to be some representatives from the RAC going. Mr. Sheehan and I, and if you can get a ride for Ms. Rush, we will go. But if there are others, because it is an open meeting, if you'd like to go, feel free. So this is an information item.
There's one thing that I hope to say to Mr. Wood that I'd like to put before this committee to see if there is some agreement on it. If so, I think I can speak to the committee. If there isn't agreement, we'll forget about it. But I think something that needs to be said is that WMATA, mass transportation, they have to make a decision. Is that a public service or is it a business? And if it's a public service, like the police, the fire department, heaven help us, the post office, it needn't show a profit. It needs to be run as efficiently as possible. But it is the obligation of the jurisdictions involved to support it and keep it functioning. And I'll leave it at that, because anything above that is above my pay grade. But unless they admit that this is a public service that is necessary for the survival of the communities, then I think we're in trouble. But anyway, that's the statement that I would make in presentation. I'm happy to sort of have a rapid discussion amongst the group. And then anything anybody would like me to say as a representative of DAAC, please put it on the table now. We'll vote on it, and I will do the honor of the majority. Garce? And because there could be a lot of discussion, I'm going to start the timer for everybody. And everybody will get to say what they want to say, but not all at once. So go for it.
Okay, first thing that should be off the timer, please, is that the assisted listening system is not working well, and we need to take care of that. And the second is I would ask the chair, I learned as I was coming to this meeting about the meeting tomorrow, and therefore I would like to ask the chair, because I'm interested in going, I think it's important to have the chair there. Since we are from different counties, I think that's important. But it is very, very unfortunate that it is an election day, statewide election, very important election in Virginia, and I think it's rather inconsiderate to have that meeting for the public on that day. But having said that, with regard to your point, I am very much in agreement with it, and the addition that I would like to see is, and a recognition that access to public transit is not just a public service, but also a civil right, as embodied in Americans with Disabilities Act, and that therefore funding needs to be provided for adequate to the job of ensuring accessibility and maintenance of accessible features, as well as the operation of Metro Access as as the ADA paratransit provided to those who are able to ride fixed route.
Thank you, Doris. Captain?
Yeah. It's my understanding, first of all, I understand we're glad to hear that we're able to learn his college. He's a waiter, but professional man I have a chance to learn. He's a very professional person, and I am sure his recommendations and suggestions would be very, very helpful to not only to WMATA, but also the disability community. The only thing that I'm aware of, I've heard about this, that he's not going to discuss anything related to the commitment of Virginia or DC or Maryland on finance. Now, if that's going to be true, I know that we do not have any fare raise in the AAC buses and transportation. But will that be temporary, or will that stay longer? Or the $130 million deficit, if I'm correctly in WMATA, and if push comes to shove, are we going to pay for it? That means our community, our disability community is paying for it by raising fare. Can we make any kind of commitment to give us some kind of assurance that that's not going to happen?
That's a good point, and I'll discuss that with you when we talk about the budget a little bit later on the agenda. Any other questions, suggestions? Charlotte, please.
And I'll use my outside voice. I want to underscore what you said in regards to public service. I mean, I believe.
Can you hear somebody? And keep it close.
And I'm going to try to use my inside amplified voice. That work?
Okay.
Okay, well, whatever. The point is, can you hear me all right?
Now.
You say it now?
Yes,
now. I'm underscoring what you said, Bill, because I think it really is necessary. Governmental function to provide for the ability of the population to go from one place to another without having to depend upon private modes of transportation, because it's just not possible for a city of this size with this many people to be able to have everybody driving around if they can drive and to make any sense of it all. So that's the bottom line on that. I do think that the way we pay for this is a challenge that we all need to meet, but it's not one we can't meet, it's just one we have to decide how we're going to do it. Thank you.
Thank you. So, we have those suggestions, discussing it as a civil right, and that's a civil right for transportation and all the facilities needed for that, and that's extended definitely this building and the ADA, and that's something that our former board chairman has stated several times. So we can do that. Can I ask for a vote on whether the committee agrees for us saying that as coming from the committee? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstained? It's carried. Thank you all very much. And again, it's an open meeting. So anyone from Virginia, Maryland, or the district that wants to come, please feel free to show up.
Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm sorry.
You must be on my phone.
Ideally, it was to be three people, no more than three, preferably two people from any one of several different organizations. My suggestion to you earlier was, if we cheated just a little bit and said two members from the AAC, and also two members from either or both the bus rail subcommittee or the metro access committee, we could cheat and get four people in. But it's not an open meeting for everybody. It's no limited.
I stand corrected. So Gadger and I will be there, and Denise, if she can have a ride. And if yours and Charlie want to come, they can represent the cop. And access for all.
Clever.
And is there anyone else that would like to come, and we'll try to find a way for them to come in too?
Over here.
Okay, Carolyn? Doug, you can replace Denise if we can't get her a ride. Or if not, they'll not make a difference. She's a beautiful woman. So we're all set for tomorrow evening, and I will ask Dean to send out the address to everybody so that you know where we're going. It's a 500 area.
500.
It's 500 A Street Northwest, and when you sign in at the lobby, they will send you to the appropriate elevator to get there.
It's a big
S number. Eight, like the number eight.
500 A Street Northwest.
It's right around the corner.
Where is that?
Gallery place. Is it closer to Constitution Avenue? It sounds like no. Okay, do we have our federal funding rep?
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Sullivan.
Oh. for having me. I'm delighted to be here. I'm Regina Sullivan. I'm Managing Director of Government Relations here at Washington Metro, and I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to be with you this evening. I know you have a very busy agenda, so I'll try not to take too much of your time. First, kudos on going over to give Secretary Lovett your input. I think that's wonderful. Because I think he's doing, trying to do a good job of being comprehensive, so he'll really be interested in having your input. Government Relations at Metro is what it sounds like. Is we are the team, it's small group, but the team that deals with elected officials on their staff in Maryland, D.C., Virginia, on Capitol Hill, and also in the administration, federal departments. I just want to take one moment to thank you for last week when we had your wonderful award ceremony. Ann Chisholm, who works in my team, on my team, who I have to say is an incredible woman and an incredible employee, was honored. And I just want to know, on behalf of the government relations team, how much we appreciate that. She loves working with you all, and we appreciate your honoring her for that. But we deal with, so we deal with the jurisdictions, we deal with the Hill, and we deal with the administration and the federal departments. And tonight what I'd like to do is just take a few minutes to talk about, you all are very familiar, I know, and I listen and attend board meetings showing how active you are and how much input you provide on the funding from the jurisdictions, the different funding mechanisms that you all are familiar with, and the GM's plan that addresses the need. But, and I know you're all very active in your communities, and that's wonderful, and I can't tell you enough, I know you know this, but let me just encourage you to talk to every elected official you can about the funding, and dedicated funding, obviously, and the funding, ongoing funding for Metro. But I just wanted to take a few minutes, and I'm going to actually be behind a one-pager, the proverbial one-pager, right, when either the elected officials or their staff. For you all that I have, that we put together, Christian, I worked with Christian, that we put together just for your group, to ask to help us with the Passenger Rail Investment Act reauthorization. The PREA is the legislation that was passed in 2008 that has provided $1.5 billion over a 10-year period to address capital and safety needs here at Metro. We've gotten $150 million for 8 years, this will be our ninth, and then next year will be the last year. And so as you can imagine, given the problems from a fiscal perspective that the federal government has, and the political environment, candidly, that we're dealing with, we are really looking for all of our wonderful resources and all of the folks who are so important and the leadership role you play here at Metro to help us with having that reauthorized. We're working with our congressional delegation, who I know you all work with and interact with, and to make the case for the continued funding. We've used the funding, as you all know, for many safety improvements to the rail system, to the bus system. You know, as you know, our formula dollars, federal formula dollars contribute to our access programs. But the PREA money was very much focused after the 2008 tragedy on fixing safety concerns. And so that is, we'd like to use, continue to use the money to address the ongoing safety issues and the maintenance safety issues that we have. So I'd really like to ask, and then I will not stop filibustering, I'd really like to ask, and I'll provide you with this one pager, that you help us with this effort. I'm happy to assist if there's any other information you need in order to do that. But as I said, we've begun this outreach. We're working with our delegation. We've gone and met with the key chairs and ranking members of the committees that have jurisdiction, because you know it's Metro, so it's complicated, right? Because we can't just have one committee that deals with us. We have like four on each side. So we really need your help, and I just wanted to come this evening and ask if you would help us out with that, and I'm happy to come back and provide more detail. And frankly, if there's anything, I know you have a very tight schedule tonight, but if there's anything else that you'd like us in government relations to know, we could help with, or things that we can improve on, I'd love to hear from you if you've got a few minutes, if the chair's okay with that.
No, that's fine. I'll just put my political lobbying hat on and point out the election's tomorrow, and the House is going to be all up for re-election. So pay attention to who's running and see them instantaneously. The Senate, a little bit later. Also, the governor's races is open in Virginia, and that's going to be very important. So you want to pay attention and get them. Don't wait for them to take office. They're going to be going into orientation or what have you. So it's good to send a congratulatory note. Tell them who you are and tell them what your issues are.
Right. If you're from Virginia, tomorrow, as you all know, the entire Virginia House, all 100 members, are up for re-election or for election. This is every registered chairman and the governor's race, and the lieutenant governor and the attorney general. And there's a number of bond initiatives for the Fairfax County residents, the old road Fairfax. We have a school bond initiative that's very important, so it's a busy day. And I should say, I apologize, I neglected to say, the $150 million that the federal government gives us every year has to be matched by $150 million, 50 from Virginia, 50 from Maryland, and 50 from the District of Columbia. So it's a collaboration between all four of the funding partners, and we need that money to continue too.
Yes, it's also very important, particularly in Maryland and Virginia, if you have friends that do not live in Prince George's County, Montgomery County, Fairfax County, Arlington County, or Alexandria, let them talk to their representatives that are downstate and point out how important transportation up here is to them when they visit the area. And they may have to come up here to go to the hospitals, because it's state money going to a portion of the state. And when it gets discussed in Annapolis and Richmond, in Northern Virginia and I'm not sure what their Northern or Eastern Maryland reps have to talk to their friends in the House to give them some money as opposed to building roads and other things in the rest of the state. So I'm sure that's in the elevator talk.
It is in the two.
But it's a chance to reach out outside of your jurisdiction if you have friends that are constituents in other jurisdictions. It's very useful. But anyway, Doris.
Yes, I want to thank you for coming. And I'm wondering if one paper is that in some packets or is it being packed?
No, ma'am. I have it, but we also, Christian reminded me, we will have it electronically also. So you'll be able to.
But are you passing it out?
Yes, ma'am.
I have not seen it.
No, I haven't passed it out yet. I just have to sit on here. I'm sorry.
We can email it to everybody so that
we can do
whatever it is. But I'd also like a copy.
Absolutely. I have right here made copies.
Okay. And then, but my question is this, with relation to what you're asking us to advocate for, am I correct that you're asking us to advocate for federal legislation?
Yes, ma'am.
My question is, what is the schedule on this, given the whole thing with the tax reform and, the federal budget and everything? What is the schedule for it? And can you also brief us on a little bit on how that will sync with the schedules for the Virginia General Assembly and the Maryland General Assembly? And particularly Virginia, because it's on such a fast track, as you probably know, the session will start in the second week of January and only go through the first week in March, and they'll be considering the entire biennial budget for Virginia this year. So I'm wondering if we're whether it's contingent upon the federal legislation being passed in the next, between now and January, whether it will even come before the General Assembly, or whether Governor McCullough is, whether this is in the budget that he will be presenting in December. Any way with some kind of contingency there for the federal legislation, or whether those dynamics are very important for us to consider as we plan for going to Richmond, and I'm sure the same is true for Annapolis, or whether if this, once this passes the feds, whether it will affect not the 2018 General Assemblies, but the 2019.
Great questions. Thank you for asking. The legislation, the federal legislation that created the passage of $150 million in annual funding expires next October. October 18th. Now, you're probably wondering, why is she here now? Because you all know, but you all know because you work the legislative process and you understand it, it is going to be a very significant, take a very significant effort to get it reauthorized. I would anticipate late this year, early next year, on the Hill, congressional side, there will be legislation that will be introduced. We're working, as I said, with our delegation on that. And I'll obviously keep you all posted, either as we'll come or through Christian or however you all would like to do it on what's going on with that. On the state side, the match that is required for next year will be in the governor's budget. So that's not a problem for next year. They will have to recommit to the PREA funding after when we get it authorized on the federal level. They'll have to say they're going to continue to match it. That will be a contingency of getting it passed on the Hill. So really the focus won't be in Richmond this year on this specific issue. There is another transit-related issue that's a statewide issue, but it's not this one. But the focus will be on the federal side on the Hill next year. But I want to come early, not wait until March when all of a sudden we have a markup and I come panicking, looking to you all to help. I thought it would be better if, and I had the opportunity to come before, so I appreciate it and kind of, and I'd like to make it a more regular, if that's possible, so we can keep you all up to speed on what we're doing.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Now, while we're talking about budgets, I want to stay around because you've been at the budget meeting along with me. What you've read in the newspaper and what I sent out as a report on the general management budget, which was the first step in the process. For those of you that have been around for a while, know that the first step is truly the first step. The board still has to discuss that budget. There are many questions about that budget, and the major thing is monetary shortfall and what they might need beyond what is in that budget. It's a double budget. There's an operating budget that keeps the trains, the buses, and metro access running day to day. And then there's the capital budget, which provides new vans and new trains and new equipment for maintenance. That in the first draft, which is a heroic draft, making heroic assumptions that the federal money and state money might not be there, and there's still a budget shortfall. And so that's the first draft. The next draft, which we will see, is next month. And at that point, after the election, hopefully they will have an idea of where we're going. Right now, there's still a major discussion of a dedicated funding source. There is a discussion pushed by the district. There's a discussion pushed by Governor Hogan of Maryland. And Governor Pollock is waiting for Secretary LaHood's report to see what side Virginia's going to fall on. So depending upon two major things, which is the renewal of PREA, which is the capital budget, and what type of dedicated funding source is there to meet what's needed, there's a lot of flux to look forward to. So I will be paying attention and send you out monthly reports as I hear things from the Finance Committee so you know what's going on. But it's a time for you to talk to your local legislators in Montgomery County, Prince George's County, in the Maryland legislature, in the Virginia legislature, in Fairfax, Arlington, whatever. So don't fall asleep at the switch. The initial budget says no fare increases and no service cuts. But that's not the final. The schedule that they have set is to have several meetings and to probably start having public hearings in January and hope to pass the final budget in March. So there's a lot of time between now and then. There's a big election tomorrow. And we'll see what happens. So I just wanted to let you know, it's great if there are no service cuts and there are no fare increases, but that's not a big deal yet. So anyway, that's my pitch on the budget, and you guys have an educated politics. So let's move on to the next discussion item, which is the new Metro Access Vehicles with Ford Motor Company.
Good evening. Thank you very much for this opportunity, and I really want to let the AAC know how valuable your input is to us. Before we begin with this, I'd like to actually tell you a little bit about the process, because I know we've talked about having representatives of Ford here, but Ford in actuality provides the chassis for the vehicle, and then the process is the chassis then goes to a conversion company. In this case, we have Transit Works in Akron, Ohio, who does that step of the process. And then the final issue is with Sonny Merriman, where they do the final insulation, painting, and things of that nature before they're delivered to us. So we do have five individuals here that have come to engage in this discussion with you. And they are Mark Roberts and Brady Childress from Sonny Merriman, who's the final vendor. They are John Mollinger and Denny Summers from Transit Works, who are the people that convert, and then Alex Joa, who is a Ford representative correct me if I'm wrong, it's Quality Vehicle Manufacturing, the QVM group?
Qualified Vehicle Modifier.
Okay, Qualified Vehicle Modifier. They're the ones that work with upfitters to make sure that any conversions that are done still meet Ford standards, safety, Ford can stand behind them and so forth in that sense. So a lot of the things that have been discussed by the Metro Access Subcommittee and this full committee are things that apply to the conversion and things of that nature. And we certainly have looked at some mitigations. We have two vehicles outside which are available to look at, one of which we've installed the wider step. We have a footrest idea that we're potentially considering to be the mitigation for the moment for the high seat. And we have some ideas for how we can increase the seat spacing on that right side. So that are some of the things that we have at the moment that are some initial thoughts. And there are also some thoughts with as far as we're going specification changes in future years. But right now, Transit Works has actually shut down their production line waiting for our feedback so that we can make some of what can be done immediately on those vehicles for next year's buy so that we can do that, you know, as quickly as possible. So they actually, you know, of their own, we'll shut down that portion of it and get the feedback from your customers so that we can try to do the best we can at getting the best vehicle out there at this time. So since you all build this as a discussion, I'm sure that you guys have a lot of input that you'd like to share with us, and I assume that's the protocol that you'd like to proceed with. I'd like to let you all make your comments and so forth. Is that how we'd like to do it, Mr. Chair?
Well, I'd like to ask a question. We had our meeting last week, and there was a final list of suggestions of what we thought were needed for access and for safety. And I'm hoping they have been shared with the gentlemen that are here.
I don't believe the final list. I don't believe I've seen the final list. I know I saw all the previous lists and so forth. So, but I don't believe the one that was generated last Monday has been shared.
Well, the things that were added last Monday to what was the original list had to do with the driver's side step along the passenger side step. The fact that there was little room for the normal size driver that we have on Metro Access to put in there. And one thing that I noticed, because I have size 11.5 to 13 feet, that the gas pedal and the brake pedal, I hit both of them at the same time, they're really close together. And then I think we had the item of the Ranger being too low.
That, yes,
and you had that. The other thing was we have tinting on the windows to passengers, which is really nice. And we wondered whether we could put into the driver's side so the driver could not be blinded by the sun than we are. And then other than that, I believe it's the same list that those were the issues we had last week. Captain, did I miss anything?
Yeah. I think I mentioned that earlier when the guest of the bus was here, the mentioned that the handle of the bus.
We've looked at some potential things there, yes. That's on our list of things to accomplish.
Yeah, that was on the list.
That was on the original list. We had Some of these things can be dealt with moderately easily. Some of them can be retrofitted on existing vehicles, and some of them not so much. With regard to the gas pedal, brake pedal, that's an original equipment design of the vehicle. That's not something that we can modify. The tent, I think there's a legal issue with how dark the tent can be for the front windshield and front.
We were talking about the side.
Well, no, but that's the front of the vehicle. In other words, from what's called the back of the driver's door forward.
Yeah.
Almost every jurisdiction has a requirement that the tent at that location is not allowed to be as dark. At least the limits for how dark it can be are not as far. And Brady or Mark, are we at the darkest tent that's legal on that right now, or do you know?
Virginia is 30%. I'm not sure what Maryland is. And I do believe Vinny may be able to comment that's a lot of that on the driver.
Ms. Ray, I will repeat what they've said on that, on some of those. I do apologize. We'll get the microphone over there for the next one. But what he said was that they have 30% tent limits on the Virginia side for those areas, and that he will check and see exactly what we have on there and what options there are to potentially make it darker. So we'll bring the mic over to that group right now.
Good deal.
Did we mention the fact that the driver's door has no handle on the inside, and if that van is potentially hit on the side and opened up where the passenger actually gets off, there's no way for us to get out of the van because we're not allowed to get out on the driver's side and or the back.
Well, first of all, the rear exit is the emergency exit. So in an emergency, you're absolutely allowed to get out the back. That's number one. And number two, while there's no normal handle, I believe there is an emergency release handle. If I can get a nod on that. Yes, there's an emergency release handle, so you absolutely can get out that door. But it's not the standard. You're correct, it's not the standard handle, but it is an emergency release handle. Part of the reason for the change in that door was the thickness, and so that we could maximize the opening width for that door.
Doris? You go Doris back to the cell.
Okay,
am I
on?
Yeah, you're on.
Okay. I just wanted to, I wasn't able to be here about the last time we met Metro Access. And when I saw the tinting mentioned, it's of extreme concern to me because as a person with a vision impairment, and speaking, certainly for people with vision impairments, I hope, that when windows are tinted in that manner, like when I'm riding a taxi cab, there's no way for me to see where I'm going. And it's even worse at night. And so I am very much concerned about tinting on passenger windows. One who's a passenger could, for example, carry sunglasses, but if you can't see where you're going, and there are no enunciators in Metro Access vehicle that I'm aware of, I think it's imperative that we not obscure people's vision, and when we looked at the vehicles here, I never noticed that, and so I would like to open that issue for some discussion if anyone wants to do that, but I'm very concerned about it. And then the other thing, the major thing that I saw in there, despite, I guess nobody's going to spacing between seats, but I did see that as important, but the real biggie was that partial step underneath the call, a half step. I'm real concerned that that's an accident waiting to happen, and particularly once it starts getting rainy and snowy and icy. And I personally experienced not only these vehicles, but that they are resident limousine vehicle that we took you to Richmond. That very thing happened, and I broke my ankle because of that very thing, the ice together with the half step.
Thank you very much. And actually, we did mention the seat spacing. That is one of the things that we do have the a way to mitigate potentially. And I'll go into a little detail about that after I mention the step. One of the two vehicles that is outside does have a wider step installed so that we can look at it. And it wasn't so much half, but about two-thirds. You're basically, your point's exactly the same. I think we went from, was it 8 inches to 13 or something like that?
8 to 10.
Only 8 to 10. Okay, so it is the wider step, and we can take a look at that. The ideas with the seat spacing, I'll go through that with some idea here. There is an issue with where the heater is currently located. It is on the right side of the rear. That limits how far the seat can be back. So what TransitWorks has done in there, when they shut down production, we've made a change to move that to the left side behind the fold-up couple seat, in which case we can increase the pitch, so the distance between the seats, to where that would add, we would increase by at least, I think it's about 2 or 3 inches, as I recall, minimum, probably a little bit more. The second thing is, although it's not quite as critical, there was an issue with the amount of space between the forward seat and the stanchion. Okay, I don't think that was as big an issue, but there's also an adjustment there. We can actually move the stanchion and modesty panel forward to make some accommodations for that. The latter issue is something we can change on existing vehicles. The former issue is going to be a little bit tougher to address on existing vehicles, but we're still looking at ways that we could do that. So that is definitely on the table for some of the items.
We'll let Lizelle go, then Carolyn, then Denise, and then when we get back to the step, in addition to making it wider, one of the big comments was whether it's still hanging out in the elements or whether it can be inside the door.
Our only production then wanted to go outside. Wide enough to accommodate a white paint that's a rigid white paint.
That's fine, Doris. We're going to move along in the order. We'll come back to this.
We had asked in our meeting that the survey that was taken from the drivers be included, that information be included, to contribute that information as well. Do you guys remember?
Yes, I do remember that. And has the driver's comments been included in what you guys have got?
We have some limited driver comments that were collected, but the comments that we have on hand are really just some of those that came through. They're relatively limited. We have people who are liking to ride better. We have people who are not liking the change that they have when they can't move to the right out of the driver's seat, which is what they were used to doing in the past. So we have some comments, but we do not have a large volume of such comments. We do have some.
Thank you. Brazil?
I was going with that you and I, the drivers themselves, that they had participated in the survey as a condition. And I'm sure you had more than just this limited amount of information.
Kevin?
Yeah. When I was using the new vehicles, the AAC vehicles, and I used wheelchair, the platform of the elevator, the length is very tight on my wheelchair. Now the wheelchairs are big, and they have a big footrest. And so coming down is very dangerous because they cannot close the front end of the platform for the elevator, the lift, because my leg was sticking out. So if there any way you could have something that will be pulled out from underneath to extend the length of the platform and for a long wheelchair so that it can stay and come down without taking the risk of maybe slipping up.
We certainly do not want to be having people going up and down on a wheelchair lift when the inner or outer barrier is not fully secured. That's the first thing that I'd like to make. Correct me if I'm wrong, are we using the same size wheelchair? This is the exact same wheelchair, same size, same lift as what was on the previous vehicles. That said, however, there may very well be a larger version that we can look at for future vehicles.
Okay. They didn't mind to check.
Carolyn?
My problem is, I'd like to know about the front door. The average person is too tall to walk in the door. Everybody has to lean their head down. So my problem is, what can we do to make the door tall and open more? We do not have small people in this community. We have people that have a disability. And when they can stand up tall, they want to stand tall. So they can't walk into the door. And they got to feel around for something to hold on to. What can we do to change that?
In one of the future iterations that was discussed in a meeting that we had is a change of where the door is located, moving to an extended van, also putting the door in a position where it essentially is behind where the wheelchair lift is. And this would give us a height that is much more similar to what we had on the previous van. I don't know that it was precisely the same, but it was much more similar. But that is a future iteration. Right now, Ford would not allow, does not allow cutting into a unibody structure.
What are we going to do next?
And I'm just telling you that
I understand what you're saying. What I'm saying to you, what are we going to do now for the people that have to get in the van? The drivers and the customers, they got to get in that van. So what can we do to protect them so they won't hit their head?
Well, I don't have an answer for you specifically on the existing van. I mean, we certainly do.
You don't have an answer. Do anybody from Ford have an answer about that door for right now? That's all I mean. Do you have an answer right there from Ford? Anything that we can do, cushion, pad, or something?
Well, you know, I think it's important for us to recognize what Ms. Bellamy is talking about is a safety concern. And the thing is, I want to be very clear that we invited Ford to come because Ford, and in fact, this representative who's here is a very, very fine gentleman who came out and met with us once before to talk to us about the design of the vehicle. Ford makes the original vehicle before, but thank you. Makes the original vehicle before all the changes, okay? So what we can't do is say to the Ford representative, after Metro bought that van, made it into a paratransit vehicle, now it's Ford's fault that the application, that the application of this type of vehicle to Metro Access is an issue for them. It's an issue for us. It comes back to me. Is basically because I and my team made the decision that this was going to be the vehicle that we were going to put into this service. So Metro has to take responsibility for that. But that said, the reason why I thought this conversation would be valuable to you is because we've had a great relationship with this group of vendors that's here today for years. We have mentioned to you before that there aren't many people out there that build purpose-built paratransit vehicles that can stand up to the wear and tear that Metro Access vehicles have to go through for the length of time we keep them, the terrain they have to cover, the heavy stop and go in the district, the congestion, all that sort of thing. So we've worked very well with them. We loved the old van. And then, you know, inevitably all good things must come to an end. They changed the design and we had to come up with something new. So it's a long way of saying, oh, is that for me? Thank you. Oh, I was looking at the clock, Bill. I promised that I was going to do 2 minutes, right? So I got to make sure.
It's just a reflex. I'm going
to. Okay. All right. No, but it's okay. I'm good. Because I promised I'd do it. It's a 12-step program. I'm on step 2. All right. So just work with me, okay? But we need to come up collectively, the committee and us, Metro staff, with safety procedures that will help protect the customer. So we'll say that we noticed this issue with the entry door before we even put it into service. And we did try to put a number of things in place, you know, things to make the make it more obvious, like brighter, you know, little decals or what have you, softer padding where we could put it in there. But we're open to suggestions. But one of the reasons why we have Ford here is said that all these things you're bringing up, we want to use this as feedback for them to help make these vehicles even more viable for us in future purchases.
Mr. Kent, what I'm asking is just this. Do they have any kind of idea that they can give us to make it safer? Not today, but they got an idea. Can they put something else that can make it safer for a passenger or a driver if the back door? Not that's important.
I understand that. I think their position is that when we raised the issue to them, they did that for us already. They used what they knew they could bring to the table at that time, so that when we finally took acceptance of the vehicles, the way they are right now, have all of the things that this group was able to offer us. So the next step that we look at is two things. Either Metro can change its procedures or add things, or we can incorporate a different design into future purchases. But we did ask them that question, Ms. Bellamy, even before we put the first vehicle on the street.
Thank you, Mr. Kent. And I agree. Tonight is to fix what we have and also to set the standard for next year. So we corrected it. Denise, please.
There was my cold voice. But first of all, definitely we hope that WMATA will not purchase in the future any vehicles without using people who have to use the vehicles' advice before the horse gets out the barn. Definitely for the future, I want that request on record that they go to the advisory committee before they purchase the buses. Okay, so now we have the buses, and there are a lot of concerns and safety issues. I have to get off of that bus basically by sitting down and scooting down the steps because to bear down to my knees to get off and hold the handle is hurting my back and my legs. I walk on the bus, so I just know I have to ride because I'm blind, and I just scoot down. But other people can see, and they're having a problem getting on and off the bus. But now that we have bought the buses, I was told that there's going to be a recall. And what does that entail? That's my next question.
Thank you, Denise.
Unless you have information I don't have, there was a recall that's already been taken care of.
And what did that entail?
That had to do with a drive shaft part, and that's why there was an interruption in delivery. If you may know that we had deliveries for a while, and then for a couple of months there were no deliveries. That's why that was mitigated, and there was a coupling issue there that had to be replaced. That was what was going on.
So there's nothing about a 35,000 mile chassis crack that may occur?
There is a 30,000 mile replacement cycle for that coupling. And the information, first of all of the... So there's a 30,000 mile replacement cycle on that coupling. And so all of them will be, all the ones that were delivered in the early part will all be replaced before 30,000 miles. And the others, the ones that were delivered later, already were replaced.
Thank you. We'll go to Charlie, then to our niece, and then we have a visiting former member here who's an expert from Boston. We'll go after them, and then we'll come back to his help. So, Charlie.
Thank you. My question is part academic and part pretty real. It's been mentioned a few times that, gee, we didn't have the ability to get the vans we had before, because if we did, obviously, we'd buy them. since they're not available anymore, we have to deal with this situation. My question is, why couldn't we have gotten the vehicles we had before?
Because they are no longer made. Ford stopped building that particular structure of vehicles about in excess of 2 years ago. It's no longer manufactured.
So the question to Ford then is, if you knew that this problem would exist and it were possible to remanufacture the old vans with modern upgrades, if you will, faced with the probability that nobody's going to buy the new ones because they're not any damn good, what would you do about the old ones?
Well, one of the things I can address on that, if you'd like, is that the Transit is sold to far more than just Metro Access. And from many aspects across the board, it is a much more advanced and a much better vehicle in many ways to the overall buying public of vans in general. It's quieter, it is a better gas mileage vehicle, it rides better, and the previous chassis, while we loved it because it was strong and we got 300,000 miles, was actually one that was initially considered to be phased out of production all the way back in 2005. And voices such as yours, and then you had actually moved into the area that extended that somewhat because it was such a reliable workhorse. But it is a platform that had well exceeded its useful life in the terms of, you know, production cycles within a manufacturer. So it was an antiquated platform. And that was a corporate decision by Ford to move forward with a van that is sold, you know, nationwide for many, many different purposes to many different customers. And from the overall viewpoint, it's been a positive result for Ford. Now, our aspect and our experience is not necessarily the same because the unibody structure limits what you can do in conversion. And that has largely to do with crashworthiness of a vehicle. It has to do with the shape of the smoke windshield, which we're dealing with the height of getting in. There's a number of different things. But from Ford's corporate point of view, and I certainly have Alex dispute if that's the case, but essentially it's a much more modern vehicle for their overall customer base.
You did a very good summary on you know, the new Transit. You know, Ford decided to go to a global platform, so the Transit is produced in Kansas City now, and it's also produced in Coachella, Turkey. Ford decided to go global on the Transit product. The other E-Series van that you're used to, that went into production in 1992, and the tooling, frankly, wore out, and they did extend the life as the customer demand, but they just wanted to go to a global platform, and they couldn't revamp and retool a E-Series and have two vans.
I appreciate that. As someone who worked on a line and had the engineers send us things to put together on the line, that couldn't be done because the engineers never been on the line themselves. I point out that we're talking about an accessible vehicle for people with disabilities. The good vehicles that you're selling are going to hotels, they're going to airports, they're going to people that are also going to be transporting people that are larger than the average fare, that have lower vision, have difficulty in mobility. And I think you're going to find that your general market is going to have the same complaints that we have, that if the door only opens the amount of degrees it opens, it's going to be hard to get in. If the step is small, it's going to be difficult for the rest of the world that buys the vehicle. And it's not just us that are complaining. I understand what you're saying. It's a universal design, but it's not a universal design for everybody if it doesn't work for us. And it's something we deal with LaMotta constantly. Anything we ask for makes things better for the regular customer.
Well, I recently got involved with LaMotta back in July, and I'm taking your desires back to engineering. I'm a mechanical engineer. I used to design the product, and I'm taking back to see what's feasible to take back for future considerations.
As we said, we're not just talking about this year. We have to make the best of a bad situation this year, but I would hope by the next cycle that correction can be made. And I think about my windshield that I had installed, and the engineer said one person can do it, and hopefully three people can do it. They did finally figure it out when the line broke down. But anyway, let me go to Darnese. And then we have Giselle one more time, and then back to the audience. So Darnese, please.
I just want to reiterate what Taffer is bringing up in terms of wheelchair size and its position on the lift. As you said, it's the same size that it was before, but it doesn't appear to be the same size to the person that's going up on a lift, because you have to be in the exact position or the flats will not go up. And when you're in the exact position for the flaps to go up that are on the bottom of your chin, you have nothing to hold on to because the handrails don't extend that far out for you to hold on to them. And you feel that your scooter or wheelchair is tipping downward like you're going to slide off, even though you have it on, you know, even though you lock it in a non-slip position, so that's very insecure. And then the other thing is, with the material of a step, could you please include a lift like a half inch to maybe an inch and a half, so that a person can feel the perimeter of the lift, I mean of a step, as they, you know, when they step up on it, because that would help people that have low vision, that would also help people that have mobility issues that slide their foot or whatever, make them feel a little more secure. And the other thing is that when you're in a wheelchair or a scooter and you're on board and you've been locked down, you need something to hold on to, because you don't feel secure in the seatbelt and the fasteners that they provide, especially when you're going over a bump. I don't know if it could be a handrail or a drop handle or something, but if that could be available for people that use chairs.
Thank you. I'm going to let Patrick go because he hasn't gone yet, and then we'll go back to his help.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, Bill. Just a quick question. I know you've made some changes. You have a couple of vehicles out there. Could you annotate that list and let us know what changes have already been made with the dates that were done, and then when you expect the other changes on that list to be finished and completed and on we go? That would be very useful for this committee. I know it would be very useful for Phil when he's going to the board to say, you know, we've done this, suggested these changes, and these are coming in the future. So that'd be great if we could have that.
Okay. Thank you, Patrick. Giselle?
Yeah, you know, I'm just thinking from a tall person standpoint, you know, someone was coming in. I've tried that bulkhead, you know, chin all the way down, coming up to the door. It's literally empty. You know, there's nothing there, just a big piece of plastic. So I'm just saying, when you guys go through, when you look at some of these changes, some of it could be where, you know, it's just filling, just design. You know what I'm saying? Where you could actually recess that going up, because I'm a tall person, I'm 6 feet. I'm just bumping my head against that thing, and it's nothing there. It's actually nothing there, because I tap it all the way down, all the way up, and it's just hollow. So, you know, if you could look at some of these things, what we're saying, it needs just a lot of, you know, frill, fancy stuff, but, you know, stuff that you could probably, instead of putting a big bump in there, just make it straight, you know. So that's I think that's some of the things that some of these folks are seeing that you could possibly live with until you come up with a new design.
Can I ask you a clarifying question? You're speaking of these, like the sloped inside roof at the front as you enter up.
Yeah, right, as you enter in and it goes all the way back.
Okay, what I'd like to do, Paul hasn't spoken yet, so let him go, and we'll let Doris go, and then I'd like to let the Ford rep talk to us a little bit, because we've all been picking on him. And then we'll take questions from the audience, and then if we can maybe go through the list and see what's already been done, what can be done, what can't be done, and then we can kind of wrap it up. So, Paul, go ahead.
My only thing is, kind of going back to Ms. Bellamy, and I heard that there are some things that may have already occurred and put in place in light of people's comments and concerns. If they could share that, that would be great, and what can be possibly done more with that, with the front door. And once this all said and done, hopefully, you know, if possible, like I said, it's a fact on, you know, people dial that, you know, maybe communicate some of these, you know, new improvements for the vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Doris.
I just wanted to reiterate that the space between seats need to accommodate both people with service animals, but also people with white canes, and some of us use the long cane method, and so even I, at 5'6", have a cane that is almost, it's either 58 or 59 inches. And it's fiberglass, so if the space isn't there, or depending on what's around it, it could break in half, you know, and that would be a big problem. And the last thing is about the door and the height of the door. It together with the step, it is problematic for people with visual impairments because we're going to be looking down, but the step down is so steep that even with the wider step, I'm still concerned, and there aren't the handrails that are effective for me to use both the cane and get down so that I won't hurt my back or something else.
Thank you, Doris. Tap in 1 minute and one minute four.
Just take this suggestion, the conversion to the four people I'm talking about, the conversion of the vehicle, especially the lift, what Ernest mentioned and I mentioned, the safety of that, is really done by Braun. Am I correct?
Correct.
That's correct. Now, the two companies that does this kind of, Braun and VMIs, they're very good at that. And Braun is the oldest one, and they're very good at it. I think we should have Braun, somebody to come there, listen to us, and it could be improved very easily because they know how to do it. I have dealt with both the Braun and the BMI who does the conversion of my vehicles. Mm-hmm. So they could do it, not that expensive really. And for safety reasons, it could be done, and I don't see anybody here from Braun who did the lift if I hear from them. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's correct. There's someone here from Braun. But we work very closely with Braun, and I'll make sure that we convey your concerns with a longer lift.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
One more, and then we'll throw to you. We have one from the audience. So you'll hear everybody and hit us with the answer.
Hi, this is Barbara Millville, a president of the National Capital Citizens with Low Vision, and I want to thank you folks for coming. And I want to give a low vision perspective, as we have a fair amount of people with partial sight and no sight riding the paratransit vehicles here in D.C. In my opinion, I do agree with the door being, I have never seen these, but I do agree that the door might be a little bit too low, as people with partial sight might be looking down, as Doris said, and just bumping their head, which wouldn't be good. And something that is related to orientation for a visually impaired person would be the noise level in the van itself. When the fan is on, it's quite loud in there, and you really need to have your ears listening for other things like what's the driver doing, what are the other passengers doing. This is for safety reasons. So if he could address that would be wonderful. And it may be a little bit quieter up towards the front, but you know that seems to be where the wheelchairs are situated. And the lighting levels within the van, sometimes people have issues adjusting between a very dark lighting environment to a very light environment. So if you could look and see what could be done about that, that would be greatly appreciated. And of course, signage. I hear a lot in these meetings that there's important signage placed in the vehicles, but I, as a person with Crouchell site have never been able to see the signage. Finally, this is just a general comment, but the suspension, because the wheelchair area is in towards the front of the vehicle, the other occupants, or those who don't use a wheelchair or mobility device, are sitting in towards the back. And as these vehicles get a lot of miles on them, they tend to not take the bumps so well, and I'm not sure about the Midwest, but we do have some potholes here, and would really like it if you could perhaps put in a better suspension system. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you.
Let's turn it over to the experts.
Well, I appreciate the input. Again, I'm Alex Joa from Ford, and I handle the Qualified Vehicle Modifier Program. And the reason for the program is, okay, Ford mass produces these chassis, and the transit's selling very well. They're going to sell over 200,000 of those. But I manage visits. I have a team of engineers, and we work with over close to 190 modifiers. And these modifiers include the mobility industry, but they also include ambulance and motorhome and police cars and motorhomes. But it's just the way that Ford is trying to control quality to suit vocational needs. So this case of the mobility industry, the Qualified Vehicle Modifier Program that I manage has design and validation criteria that a mobility modifier such as Transit Works is here. They're the largest and the highest quality company on the planet. I visit all of them, and WMATA partner up with the best company on the planet. And I'm taking notes here, this is the second meeting I came to WMATA. As I mentioned, I was here in July. But I do attend the NMEDA annual meetings, the National Mobility Dealer Equipment Association. I also attend ADA. That's the drivers for physically challenged people who want to drive. So the mobility industry isn't new to me, but I'm taking notes here, and I want to get some of the other desires from the previous meetings and work with Denny Summers here from Transit Works. And within the scope of our quality program guidelines, I think some of these issues can be addressed in the future. So it's not that Ford doesn't care. Ford does care. They have a mobility motoring program where they offer $1,000 assistance for certain mobility applications, but there's there's a lot here, and Ford does care, but since Ford mass produces these, we use companies like Transit Works and the other modifiers to allow modifications within Ford guidelines to try to suit your desires. And then as far as suspension, things can be done to soften the suspension. There's aftermarket suspensions, but it's going to obviously cost some money to change the suspension and make it ride softer. And as far as handles, sure, handles could be incorporated, but other things that have to be kept in mind. There's federal motor vehicle safety standards that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration administers, and you have to meet the federal motor vehicle safety standards. So just putting on different devices, you have to stay within the laws of the government. So it's easier said than done. But I'll work with Transit Works and WMATA to see what we can do to improve your needs for what you want.
Thank you. If I can ask a question, the two vehicles that we have out front, what modifications have been made on those? I'm trying to decide whether we want to take time to go out and look at them or wait until after the meeting is over and let people do it at their leisure.
What has been done on one of the vehicles is that we have installed a wire step. Also, on one of the vehicles, we have a mock-up prototype of a footrest that could potentially be used to mitigate the higher double seat. Now, the one that's there is more just for test. It's not the same material that would end up being used. The only other modification on the vehicles that are out there right now is some additional safety lights on the back of one, and we have one out there showing the two wheelchairs tied down in it. So not, most of these things that we're discussing are not already installed, so your points are made. There's not a, there, we'll certainly be out there after the meeting and we'll be happy to have people if that's your choice.
Okay, that's great. Now, I'll just reiterate what Mr. Sheehan had, is their dates are deliverables, so that for the handles and for the fan on the top and for the movement of the seats and the vent system to the other side and all that sort of stuff. Can you look forward to that for Christmas? Or
looking forward to that for Christmas is probably a good estimation. We're definitely going to be having meetings tomorrow morning to iron out some of the things that have been said tonight, to work out a path forward. And I certainly think that we could get a list, either an interim list quicker or a more comprehensive list by sometime in mid-late December. So,
okay. Well, I would ask, since we're going to have a Metro Access Committee meeting in 2 weeks, if we could get a report from your meeting after this meeting to that group so that Metro Access community will have an idea of what you guys have worked out tonight and where we're going.
Absolutely.
And let me let Mr. Arlene speak to the audience and then go back to Keith Patrick for the final comment. And Carol.
I might believe that
one microphone.
I might believe that the conversion of any commercial vehicle for purposes of paratransit is ultimately a self-defeating proposition. 40 years ago, FTA's predecessor agency worked for several years on the design of the prototypical paratransit vehicle, but this was before ADA. I don't understand why APTA, and maybe in conjunction with IPLPA, couldn't put out a request for information from the existing large automotive companies and the modifiers that they chose to participate, and come up with the design and the engineering for a universal design of the paratransit vehicle that could be used widely in the market at APTA agencies and IPLPA member companies. The market is large enough, the suggestion has been around long enough, that if the folks with any influence, like Mr. Kent, Mr. Worth, wanted to do it, then you could get a decent paratransit vehicle.
Thank you. We'll go to Mr. Kent.
I just wanted to interject this. Actually, and that's going to shock him, but I do agree with Mr. Orlick on that point, actually. I think that his idea can have some merit in a place like TRB, the Transportation Research Board, for one thing. It's one thing to come up with an optimal design that works for the customer. It's quite another to make it commercially feasible for a manufacturer to produce it and be able to make enough money for it to be business conducive. But I think that the idea of what Bill was saying, one of the things that Metro's been struggling with is the fact that it isn't like when you go buy a regular passenger car that there's this huge selection. These are very custom-made vehicles. I was very gratified to hear Ford compliment Transit works so highly as an upfitter. That's a great boon for us. But we always like to be in a position of choice. And the reason why these gentlemen are here this evening is because I know that we did not consult the committee this time when we bought these vehicles, and I discussed that before. But I asked Mark Roberts to come forward if he could speak for just a moment. He's with Sonny Merriman, and he's been doing this for us for a long time. And just to say that this is the first time he has told me that we've conveyed feedback from the AAC through Metro staff to them. This evening is the first time the committee's input has been given directly to these companies. So, you know, we did this. Hopefully you kind of make it up to you guys. make sure that what you have to say is directly heard. But I'd like Mark to close this up if he's good.
Well, before we close this up, why don't you hear what Patrick and Carolyn have to say, and then you have addressed everybody in the room.
Even better. Right. Mine's going to be fairly quick. Phil, I know we've made a lot of suggestions as a committee, individuals on this committee, with respect to these vehicles. Have we kind of taken a vote as a committee to endorse what we have individually said as the recommendation from the AAC to to WMATA and the board?
Yes, the list that we forwarded was circulated through the entire committee, and the only one that is under discussion is the tinting of the windows, and that's going to come down to what the law will allow.
So as I understand it, then, that the recommendations going forward are the ones from the committee and endorsed by this committee?
Yes, the sheets that you just received from the Dr. Gordon. Carolyn, last comment.
I have one question. Have you figured out a way how to raise the ranger? It's distracting for a driver with them. Have you?
The answer is yes.
Thanks.
Terrific. Take it. I'm sorry, we have a late large in hand. It's the fourth quarter. Franklin, please.
I apologize. This is Dr. Torres speaking through an interpreter, and I just wanted to say that I agree with the comments about access, and but I wonder if the designing companies have thought specifically about deaf individuals, deaf-blind individuals. There are some new features out there in terms of signage that would be effective with those particular riders. I know that the annunciators on the bus where it said where the next stop is and things like that are good for folks that have low vision, but I just wondered if there's also things that you thought about for individuals who are deaf, who are deaf and deaf blind.
Thank you. Now.
Thank you very much. My name is Mark Roberts, Senior Vice President of Sunny Merriman Incorporated. We're a Virginia dealer for the TransitWorks products. So we partner with both Ford Motor Company and TransitWorks and Braun and others, including air conditioning manufacturers, et cetera, that put all the pieces together. And then we as a Virginia dealer serving in the D.C. area, we offer up a bid on the product that they've chosen to specify. And fortunately for us, we were able to receive the contract to provide the vehicles. What I wanted to say mainly was, although this is our first opportunity to attend an AAC meeting, your concerns, your thoughts, your ideas, and your suggestions have been passed along to us since 2007 when we began. That was our first year of receiving a contract to provide the Metro Access vehicle. So this is the first time we've been here in person. We would be privileged to come back if you would ever have us back for one of your meetings if you felt it necessary. We'll be here. And what I also want you to understand is whatever's best for you is best for us as dealers. It's best for Ford and TransitWorks, manufacturers, because ultimately the goal needs to be that we're all satisfied by the process. And we have been for multiple years. We knew that a new platform was going to create a lot of challenges. But I look back at when we first started in 2007, we've had a pilot program every year since 2007 and made multiple changes every year since 2007 to accommodate your concerns or to incorporate new technologies that have become available, like we just heard about. So your information can benefit us and help us know more about what you need. And in many cases, you can provide us information on how we can do that, how we can provide that for you. We want this to be a partnership. It is best for all of us when it is. And we thank you for the opportunity to come and be a part of this tonight. And I know we'll get you a timetable of deliverables, and that'll be a joint process between all of us to create that for you. But I'd just like to thank you all very much.
I'd like to thank you for coming and listening to us. And I watch. You're all taking notes, which is a really good sign, and appreciate it. And look forward to getting the feedback at our next Metro Access Advisory Committee meeting. So thank you very much. And you're invited to come anytime you want, because I'm sure we will have good ideas for you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could just ask your indulgence for one more
second. Yeah, I won't even turn on the time.
So Donald W. Scruggs, I'd just like to recognize him for being Metro's representative in receiving these vehicles over these many years. We've been very fortunate in Metro Access to have someone who spent 30, how many years?
Almost 35.
almost 37 years doing maintenance, bus maintenance and paratransit maintenance work for WMATA. So he's been looking out for our interests for a very, very long time. But he has been our representative in working with these fine gentlemen. I just want to recognize him for his work. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. As opposed to your most recent announcements, hopefully it's not that you're ready to retire because they work for a while.
We do what we can to make them happy. You know, he became the assistant director of Metro Access, and you know, a lot of people took note of that, that someone in the maintenance field moved up into a higher administrative position. But I think one of the things that we learned from having Don in that role is just how much a partner the maintenance teams are to the operations teams to make this service happen. And I think he's helped us all gain a greater appreciation for that.
Thank you very much. Okay, we're right on schedule. And Mr. Semmelfort, you have an extra 10 minutes. But don't use it.
I was supposed to, I guess, give my subcommittee report, but I get the minutes that I needed from the last meeting to refer to. So, even though I asked for it about 5 days ago, please, maybe can I recap something? Because usually I get them and I can make summary on this. I know we talked about abilities right a bit and I can speak to that, but what other things before I go to that?
We went to the Polar CDC building and they were very hospitable, and I am embarrassed at the participation that we had. We were invited out and we did not show up. I think there were 5 people at the meeting.
Ed, if I might interrupt for just a minute, particularly to the new members of the committee, who don't use Metro Access. Metro Access, and we'll talk dollars and cents, because money makes the world go around, is the most expensive part of the WMATA budget when we talk about paratransit. It's really important. It's part of the budget wars every year as to how they are going to be able to afford to fund it, because it is an ADA requirement. And as this community is aging, the number of people that are eligible for paratransit gets larger and larger. When I started, it used to cost $25 a ride for the system, for WMATA, not for the riders. It's now up to $50 a ride. In the system.
It's
58. It's changing as we talk. And so one of the things that I did as not a Metro Access user when I first came on board was I started to come to the committee meetings to learn about it. I now need Metro Access because I have grown into it. As we all say, we are a community. Everybody can join any minute, whether they want to or not. And so when an opportunity comes to see the center, or to see what's going on, it's really an opportunity to see where Metro is spending your money and the things that the users of Metro Access tend to complain about to get changed and made better. And so I am hopeful that in the spring, when the weather gets better and we don't have to stand out on the platform at St. George Plaza, to get to another center that the rest of the committee will actually go out there and see it, because it's an incredible operation. It's much more complicated than the rail control center, because they're dealing with individuals. The rail control center is dealing with trains, and they can pretty much run it. So we will set a time in the spring to have another visit, if they will permit us to do that. And hopefully this time everyone can come. Ed, please.
I'm just curious. I keep hearing that the price of the subsidy keeps going up. If the numbers are increasing, should the subsidy be decreasing somewhat?
Well, it's very interesting because in the real world of market values, and that's where markets don't always work, on bus and rail, the more riders, the better. because their fares are figured as a percentage of the cost of the ride. And on bus and rail, the buses and the trains run whether they're empty or they're full. So they need more ownership. In the case of Metro Access, the contracts call for reimbursement for road hours. And so what happens is, the more riders we have, the more WMATA has to pay the contractors. And because we are paying such a small amount of the total cost of the ride, and I know it's a lot of money when we say it's $6.50. And even if it goes up to $10, which I know has been a tradition by my colleagues, that's still not a lot of what WMATA has to pay. And so, no, unfortunately, WMATA, less riders is better, which is why they give us free transit on bus and rail, because they're paying for that bus and rail to run, whether we're on it or not, and if we're not on Metro Access, they're saving $65. So, yeah, what you say is absolutely correct for the Chicago School of Market Research. But for Metro Access, it's a little bit different.
So to continue,
yes, Paul, please.
So to continue, we did talk a little bit about Village Ride. Like I said, I see true potential. I do use this myself amongst other committee members. There are some, you know, good pluses about it. At least I know from Silver Cats, and they've gotten better about, you know, being able to communicate your reservations and, you know, coming. It does help to do the reservations. I started using the app at the request of a certain staff member last week. I tried it for the first time today. Out of the three trips, one went south, and two went actually pretty well. You know, he came, they were very professional, they got me from A to B, didn't have to, you know, they knew where to go, which is great. But this still keeps to even work out with that, and hopefully that will prove better over time. But I will say Mr. Blake has been very responsive to any concerns and accommodations of the service.
Yes, sir.
All right.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Anything else, Ms. Rushby? I know we talked about one of the four things, so we'll have to reiterate that, which is our presentation.
That's about all, because it, you know, it wasn't a full defense, because it didn't have really a lot of difficulties.
And Charlie, do you have something to add to that?
Well, we have Patrick first.
And I've got Charlie.
Go ahead, Charlie. Go ahead, Charlie. As it relates to the Metro Access report.
All I want to say that I just heard this before I came to the meeting today, but there is allegedly two of one of these drivers who have refused to transport persons with service animals due to allergies. I've not got confirmation on all that stuff yet, but it was serious enough to mention in the front issue.
Thank you, Charlie. And hopefully when it's confirmed, you will pass it on to Mr. Blake, who's handling all that stuff right now. Patrick.
Paul, do we have any numbers on abilities, Ryan? Two questions. One, do we have, what are the, what does the abilities ride look like as far as numbers? And two, who is our point person for making sure that the app is accessible?
So I can answer probably both. I know for the month of September, when it started on September 18th, Mr. Blake did say that there were 130 trips, if I'm correct, that month. But we hopefully he'll be coming to the mic soon to give numbers for the month of October if he has those statistics. And he is the project manager, so he is the pinpoint person for anything and all about abilities for him.
There's also been a request to have that added to a Metro Access data report every month.
Right, because
including the reduction in ridership in Montgomery and Prince George County as a result of abilities ride. So we are going to be tracking that.
The other thing that would be important, because I've had my issues also with abilities ride, in that you ask for a pickup, and it's the on-time performance sometimes is less than desirable. So going back to what Bill Orleans has asked for, what is in the contract as far as on-time performance, as far as pickup, what can we expect? But I think I want to go back to Paul, the point person for the apps on both the Silver and Regency.
Mr. Blake isn't going to speak to that.
Right. I hear that they are accessible, and I also hear that they're not.
Okay, so could I respond to that real quick?
Sure.
I'm the point person for that, for both companies. And what I would do, though, for the customers, I want to hear about any challenges customers are having so I can keep a record and follow up with the companies. But I also then refer the individuals to the particular staff who can address any specific issues that are raised. So let me make clear, and so we're all using, or at least understand the language I'm using. The Abilities Ride program is an accessible program because people can use multiple means of reserving trips. The apps are accessible in the sense that I have had several people who have blind or low vision who have taken trips using solely the app of at least the one company. Are there, for example, someone you know very well who pointed out that there was one link missing when it came to entering the credit card and knowing that particular link? That does not make an app inaccessible, in my view, of the ADA. Does that make it a more challenging usability matter that needs to be addressed? Yes, it does. And the company, to my understanding, did address that complaint once they heard about it. So we are looking for those types of shortcomings to continue to improve the app that's out there, and I'll be meeting with the other company that has already promised a greatly improved app on their side, and that's Silver, and that meeting is coming up later this week. So and now to the numbers.
So the point person, because I'm not, I do this kind of stuff all the time at work, addressing defects. So is David the person we want to go to?
No, Christian Blake. You need to send all questions and concerns and comments about Abilities Ride to Christian Blake.
I know the guy.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
And last comment from Doris, and then we'll go to the
Melbourne
Doris.
Actually, this is a question. The question is, what is the expected schedule for, this is, I believe, still, you know, a pilot, for reporting, statistics and performance and some kind of report. If we're going to need a report that we will be able to see before this were extended, what would be extended to the district, or particularly in my case, Virginia, because there's a lot of discussion going on, for example, at Fairfax County level, on the Mobility and Transportation Committee of the Fairfax Area Long-Term Care Council, which I serve on as an appointee of the Board of Supervisors. So, the FADSB is also joining board appointed committee that participates in that joint transportation. So we are really interested in that, but would feel very concerned if something went ahead with Virginia jurisdictions without having some full information about performance, and I know that takes time, but I'm hoping that's what's going to happen.
So can I answer that real quick? So, because there was a question about the numbers, so yes, Paul Somerfort was correct on the first 10 days. Then we'll be getting a report, which I should have the numbers by the time of the next Metro Access Subcommittee meeting, and I'll be happy to share the ridership report. And the numbers that I'll be sharing publicly, and this is not just for the AC, this is for the media, whoever, would be number of trips, number of customers, and number of trips for customers requesting wheelchair accessible vehicles. Question was raised, what's in the contract about on-time performance? Again, this is not a metro service, so I did not put anything in the contract or the solicitation when it came to on-time performance. What you're doing in this case, in this project, like in D.C., which we don't have an on-time performance standard there either, you're using a private entity. If I went out, Chris Blake went out and called a cab today, I would want the cab to arrive at the time I want it to be picked up. But Chris Blake doesn't have a entity that's holding the cab company accountable to an on-time performance. That's why what I suggested is though reservations are not required, this is same-day on-demand service if you choose to use it. I have strongly encouraged making reservations ahead of time because as individuals, we never know what else is happening out in the world in terms of demand for these private entities. So that's not in the contract. There is no data that I will be tracking in terms of quote unquote on-time performance. I am watching trips that are canceled or no-show, as they mentioned by the contractors, but even on the no-show late cancellation, unlike Metro Access, where if you accumulate too many, you're in a sense punished because you could accumulate a suspension. Well, it starts with the warning letters and suspensions, etc. If one particular customer, I'll just pick on Paul since Paul's been using the service a lot, if they report to me that Paul has 10 no-shows in a week or a month, what have you, I'm not going to punish Paul. I don't have any authority to do that because that's a private entity. They need to work that out with Paul. But I would probably ask them, is this accurate or what's going on? Because I want everybody to be good. I'm grabbing on this chair. So things that are private entity related with the service, Metro is leaving to the private entity. The things that we did put in the contract relate to accessibility and equity. Those are the measures we'll be holding the private providers accountable to.
And I would strongly suggest, number one, that does write it, if you want to come at a particular time, it's, reserve it well in advance. There's a high probability that it will come on time either by app or by phone. That's what I would strongly suggest. And to check at least an hour before the trip happens to make sure, you know, everything is going kosher and smooth.
Well, thank you. Ed?
Okay. The Bus and Rail, you know, they've discussed primarily shuttle services for planned elevator outages, and Mr. Blitz mentioned that there was a Metro was plans a request for proposal for shuttle services to be provided for by a commercial entity with smaller wheelchair accessible vehicles rather than tying up a Metro bus. So he basically encouraged the AAC to read the RFP if and when it's released and provide comment. We also had a discussion by Mr. Nietzsche, the acting general superintendent for Office of Elevator and Escalators. And he was discussing primarily what their future intentions are. And one of them is to replace the 100 worst elevators in the system. That's scheduled to be completed by the year 2024. And their proposed availabilities are 97.5%. For the elevators and 93.5 for escalators. One of the last situations was there was an emergency exercise at the White Flint Station back in August of this year, and several people took part in that, especially some of the newer members, and got some pretty good comments overall. It seemed that it was lack of communications was the primary complaint, and then a lack of disregard by the first responders in this case. So I think we're going to see if we can, the next time we have an emergency exercise, we can get the fire to, we can get some people representing the first responders, whether it be fire or police or whatever, and come in here before the exercise and discuss, you know, make them familiar with what our needs are. So that was primarily.
Thank you. We're ahead of schedule. It was wonderful, which I am going to take the chairman's prerogative. In Robert's rules, you do not need a motion to adjourn. You only need to finish the agenda. And we can't adjourn. And since we have 10 minutes left and the vehicles are still outside, for those of us that do want to take a look at those two vehicles, I'll let them do that. And I'm not ignoring Charlie's. I'm asking to make a comment before we get out to the new vehicles. Charlie?
Thank you. I just want to raise the issue of the red line not servicing Beaumont for November 25th through December 10th, something like that. And then two dates in December when subsequent years will not be open. I don't know what's happening there and how we find out.
What I recommend is the next Monday, I will write it down. I will put that in my report to the board. What we're doing, as far as I know, we're adjourned. I'm just talking to Charlie. It's part of the historic process of the tournament. It's the randomness is going to be, it's like us having 30 minutes between training and training.